Welcome to STEM Spots, a weekly science review produced in cooperation with the Missouri State University Department of Physics, Astronomy, and Materials Science.
Hi, this is Dave Cornelison, and you are listening to the web version of STEM Spots. With me via Zoom today is Daryl West. He's the Vice President of Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. Thanks for stopping by, Daryl.
Thank you, David. Nice to be with you.
Now, Daryl, you've just written a book. I mean, you've written several books, and we've talked about one before, but you've written a book called Turning Point, Policymaking in the Era of Artificial Intelligence, and you co-authored that with John R. Allen, who I guess is the president of the Brookings Institution. Talk about the evolution of that book and your motivation to write it.
I mean, John and I wrote that book because we think AI is the transformative technology of our time. It's being deployed in sectors from healthcare and education to transportation, e-commerce, and national defense. So what we do in the book is present in-depth case studies of how AI is being used in each of those areas, what the opportunities are, as well as the risks. And we also take a deep dive into AI and national defense and the geopolitical aspects in terms of dealing with China, Russia, and Europe. So the book combines both a U.S. domestic and international applications in AI. We chose the title of Turning Point because we do think we're at an inflection point between headed towards utopia or dystopia. And the crucial variable in determining that future is going to be public policy.
Talk about your own background and about John's background, although he's military, so I'm not sure exactly how I would address him. But talk about how you both came to this book, what expertise you bring and what background you bring.
Well, John is the president of Brookings, but prior to joining our institution, he was a Marine general. He led the Afghanistan campaign under Obama, so had years of experience. And what I hadn't realized before I met him is how the military actually is a big technology innovator. So when he came to Brookings, he was very interested in technology, very interested in AI, especially knowledgeable about AI in the military, AI in national defense. So what I like about the book is it really combines his tremendous expertise on the defense side, the military side, and the geopolitical side with I've done more work in terms of technology in U.S. domestic settings. And so the book is strong, I think, in both areas, which makes it a little unusual because a lot of technology books either are strong on the international dimensions or strong on the domestic, but few people can actually cover both of those things.
You know, when you say an inflection point and you say dystopia versus utopia, there's plenty of people on the street and certainly in 4chan and other places who are certainly willing to buy into the dystopia part. When you say utopia, you don't mean flowers and peace and everybody's an opera star. So what would be the good outcome, the utopian outcome of the next decade or something?
I mean, the positive vision is basically AI taking over the repetitive, boring, or downright dangerous tasks, and therefore enabling humans to focus on more interesting things, more creative endeavors, higher level jobs, opportunities to pursue hobbies, art, culture, music, and so therefore improving human efficiency and effectiveness and freeing people to do more interesting things.
Okay, so right now, as far as the development of all this stuff goes, as you pointed out, the military and everybody else has really been involved in this. Are we in the Wild West right now, or is there a better metaphor for what we're involved in right now?
We are in a Wild West because for the past few decades, the United States has had a libertarian stance on the technology sector, meaning there hasn't been much government regulation. We pretty much have delegated most of the major decisions to private technology companies. They decide what products to develop, where to deploy them, to whom to sell them. But right now, there is a growing techlash, a public backlash against technology where people are concerned about many different things, privacy, human safety, problems of bias in AI, and so on. So we may be ending this libertarian stage and moving into a new stage where there's going to be more public oversight and more government regulation of the technology sector.
So let's talk a little bit more about that, because one of the things people worry about with all these new technologies is even with the amazing things that they promise, there's still an access to them, which many times is a hurdle for those who are in the lower socioeconomic classes. And so is it possible that it just establishes a feedback loop where the rich continue to get richer?
That is a very real risk, because that's exactly what we've seen over the last few decades. Income inequality has risen, and obviously there are many reasons for that, but technology actually has made that inequality problem much worse. We now are in a situation where there are information haves and information have-nots. The have-nots are people who don't have access to digital technology. They're off the grid. They're not online. And today, to apply for many jobs, you need to have access to the internet. If you don't have good internet access, you can't engage in online education, telemedicine, e-commerce, or remote work, working from home. And we've seen a lot of problems during the current pandemic of people without resources and without access to technology, just falling further behind. They're more likely to get sick from COVID. They're not able to take advantage of online education, and it just perpetuates the inequality that we already have.
Right. And this whole thing about market forces versus government oversight. So I understand what you're saying about now there's a techno lash at some level, and people are starting to at least expect government oversight to come into play. But as you know, there's also a pushback from many people who just want to see not laissez-faire, but they just really want the government out of everything. And so is it really critical over the next decade that government get involved? I mean, is that going to, let's just say, not only is that going to happen, but is it critical that it do happen, that it does happen?
We think, and we argue in our book, that it is critical that the government gets more involved. And the interesting thing is, just over the last 1 to 2 years, there's been a lot more criticism of the technology sector from both liberals and conservatives. So liberals are concerned about the loss of privacy, problems of inequality, ways that technology are taking jobs and threatening people's livelihoods. But we're also seeing a lot of criticism from conservatives. They're worried about political bias. They see these large technology companies being centered mostly on the West Coast, controlled by liberals, often having a global focus that does not highlight American issues. So what could happen is there's a growing possibility that the left and right could come together basically in favor of regulating the technology sector. Even though they have slightly different concerns, both sides actually are worried about the current direction of the technology sector.
So let's think about two things with respect to that. The first one would be, many people think the government has been basically gridlocked for a while with respect to all kinds of things, potable water, energy policy, climate change, healthcare. And so where's the change actually coming for things like this at the government level? Is it a federal response or not? So that's the first question.
Right now, there is growing government regulation taking place of the technology sector, but it's mostly at the state and local level. So California passed a landmark privacy bill. So that kind of takes a more stringent stance on companies protecting people's privacy. Some cities have banned facial recognition technology. Others have imposed restrictions on Airbnb rentals. So this growing stance of regulating the tech sector is definitely unfolding at the state and local level. And it's starting to spread to Congress. I mean, just in the last few weeks, there was a major hearing where the CEOs of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google were called to testify before the House Judiciary Antitrust Subcommittee. And they were really grilled by both Republicans and Democrats. There was concern about the impact on jobs, what it's going to mean for the workforce. Are these companies accumulating too much power? Are they hurting small and medium-sized businesses? So I think that that type of sentiment is going to accelerate, and soon the national government is going to take a tougher stance on the technology sector.
So this might not be fair to think, but it's my general impression that the EU is ahead of us in response to these sorts of things. Is that true?
That is true. On several aspects of technology, the EU has taken a very tough stance. I mean, they led the way in terms of privacy protection and passed a very tough law. It's even tougher than the California bill. They are currently developing pretty strict regulations of AI in terms of wanting to make sure that AI bends towards human values and doesn't just serve commercial interests. So in a lot of respects, they have been at the forefront, and the United States has been lagging. But there's increased coordination between the EU and the United States. There are members of Congress that are now regularly talking with their counterparts in the European Union. And so some of the ideas that started in Europe are starting to spread to American policymakers.
Okay, now when you think about a lot of this stuff, the argument, as you just pointed out, goes something like this. Technocrats will say fears are unfounded, and they'll point to all sorts of things that happened in the past, from the cotton gin to, who knows, the automobile to the telephone, as ways to show that technology leads to this maybe not brave new world, but to whatever it leads to. And not only that, there's a lot of arguments made along the lines of menial versus meaningful work. I mean, you talked about the AI would take on dangerous, repetitive, boring tasks. Have you talked to enough people to get a sense? Does the average citizen actually wait with bated breath for this amazing new future, which is conceivably upon us? Or are they basically sitting around saying, the only thing I care about is whether or not I can get my food faster when I order it online or something like that?
I mean, if you look at public opinion surveys, the public is growing worried about the loss of privacy, cybersecurity issues, their email being hacked. The Edelman folks did a survey, and they found 61% believe technology change is moving too fast, and it's hard for people to adapt to the rapid pace of change. And 66% say it's hard to distinguish the real from the fake. So I think, in some respects, Americans for a long time have been very optimistic about technology, and we feel that whatever the problems are, eventually we'll work it out and it will become more helpful to people. But right now, people are worried that there are several things that have come together. We have the technology revolution. There are increases in computer storage capabilities and processing speeds. And then there also are changes in business models where companies are starting to rely more on short-term workers, temporary help, and independent contractors. And so the problem is there are several revolutions taking place simultaneously. If it was just only the technology, I would be less worried. But when you kind of combine the technology advancing, the advances in computer processing power, and just changes in the way businesses are operating, that to me is the thing people should be worried about.
Now, most people would just blow off the possibility of dystopian. They hear that word, and of course, they think of the Terminator series or, I don't know, whatever you might think of. There's a million examples. And so let's say it doesn't go those kind of ways. But let's just talk about the possibilities, both amazing and let's use quote terrifying unquote. Have you thought about which way it could go? Not with zombie robot apocalypse, but instead negative outcomes that could happen if people don't get more involved in this.
I mean, in the book, we take an optimistic stance in the sense that there clearly are many benefits of technology. There are lots of ways in which all of our lives already have been enriched. Things are easier, they're more convenient. You have access to amazing resources online, and people love the convenience of that. But at the same time, people understand that there's a loss of privacy, there's cybersecurity threats. China's investing a huge amount in AI, and there are possible threats to the long-term competitiveness of the United States. There are risks in terms of people being able to keep their jobs, people worried about the workforce ramifications. So it's really the reason we entitled our book Turning Point, because it could go in either one of those directions. I can cite a lot of evidence in support of either one of those scenarios, but I think the key thing is humans are still in charge. When I give talks, people are really worried about the loss of human control. That's the whole Terminator thing, that the robots are going to enslave humanity. I tell people, you don't have to worry about that for 300 years. What we need to focus on now is how to protect privacy, how to protect human safety, how to eliminate bias in technology. Those are actually manageable things, but we need good governance that takes those problems seriously and comes up with policy solutions to address them.
Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about that, because just a few years ago, people would think of AI being mostly localized within computers, and so it can do all kinds of advanced processing and recognize things and have better plans and so forth. And then they think about robotics, where robotics are mostly either vacuum cleaners that can walk around, or people, you know, walk your dog or whatever it is. But lately, as you can see with things like Musk's Neuralink, where now people are actually saying we can have a human AI interface. And whether that's going to happen, he certainly has implanted one of these into a pig now, and it supposedly holds out all this great promise. But one of the things that's interesting to me is that with things like potable water and things like trash collection and other kinds of very basic needs, there's an assumed right on the part of every person to have access to those sorts of things. But in the early stages of this sort of, as you point out, turning point, it seems like it's going to be pretty clear that those who have money are going to have a lot more access to some of these amazing things over the next decade than those who do not have money. So will government make any of these things, do you think, become a basic fundamental right? Access to these things becomes a right? Or is it still going to be a privilege?
I mean, you're exactly right. That is a huge problem, and that has been the story of recent decades, where technology has aggravated and widened the inequalities that already exist. But it doesn't have to be that way. So, for example, one thing that government can do, and I think likely will do, is to invest in infrastructure such as rural broadband. I mean, we know people who live in the country have less access to high-speed broadband. It's been harder for the private companies to wire those areas. You know, it's like in the early days of electricity, rural areas were left behind. And so the government stepped in with rural electrification and put the money in so that all those small towns had electricity. We need to do the same thing in terms of high-speed broadband, so that, you know, if you're living in rural Missouri, you know, you could still work for Amazon. You could work remotely that way. So I think that is one of the important things that government can do to make sure that our policies become more inclusive, and that poor people, rural people, and other types of individuals don't get left behind.
Well, Daryl, thanks so much for stopping by today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the conversation.
And I recommend for everybody to think about these sorts of things. This is a national problem. It's not a regional problem, but it certainly affects those of us who are in the Ozarks. And once again, the book is Turning Point, Policymaking in the Era of Artificial Intelligence, by Daryl West and John R. Allen, by the Brookings Institution Press. And this is Dave Cornelison for STEM Spots, the web version, signing off.
STEM Spots is available online at ksmu.org.